Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome to I'm Listening. This is a Frasier fan podcast hosted by number one Frasier fan, me, Anita Flores. Every episode, we have a special guest, and today is no different. Today, we have what I consider a Twitter expert and meme king, Jesse McLaren, on the show. Jesse, how are you today?
I am okay.
Oh, just okay, but
I'm good.
I appreciate your honesty. It is, you're in LA, I'm in New York, so it is early. It's like 10:15 a.m. there,
I think. Yeah, it's not that, I mean, it's a Saturday, so that's extra early.
That is, and I appreciate you being up. You've had some coffee, I think, so you'll be extra jittery, which I always appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
I decided I really wanted to have Jesse on because he's one of my favorite people to follow on Twitter. You might know him as... Is it Mick Jesse?
Yeah. Did you just say Fowler?
Did I say father? No, follow.
No, Fowler.
Fowler?
Oh, follow.
Follow.
Yeah.
You're one of my favorite people to follow on Twitter. I feel like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like one of the times that I saw you sort of, I don't know, kind of blow up to a level I haven't seen is a particular tweet you did about Ariana Grande, which I have in front of me right now. And it's sort of parodying the cover of, what is it, her single? I don't know. But she's sitting on a chair with her legs up and you tried to recreate it. I've done the research and there's no way her ass is sitting on that stool. Would you say that's like, is there a meme that you've created that probably you feel like was your sort of your greatest performing or where does this Ariana Grande tweet fall on that scale?
Yeah, I think it would be that one for sure. That's the Ariana Grande thing was the only thing that like really branched out outside of Twitter where they're like doing it on like Good Morning America and The Talk and then like, it was like in magazines, and I remember my mom texting me that she was reading about it in a magazine in a hair salon. And then she sent me the magazine, yeah.
Aw. I was going to say she probably has it framed or it's in a clipping somewhere in her house right now.
She ripped the page out and she mailed it to me.
Aw.
And I have it.
Would you say
it was in style or in touch?
Would you say that tweet was sort of the most publicized?
Yeah, there was that, and there was I did a thing where I put Pennywise the Clown into my sister's engagement photos. Like,
that's right.
Around the same time, I think. And that one was they really like wanted like I think morning TV shows really wanted to interview us.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I ended up. My sister didn't want to be on TV, like, understandably, right after that.
That's funny.
So then I ended up, like, on some Australian morning show, like, Skyping in without my sister. I was like, yep, I did that.
Right. It's not about her. It's about the tweet.
It's about me.
Not about the wedding. So I actually have a few of my favorites that you did. I really liked, or actually you sent me a few too. Oh, Hillary doing the Macarena. I think I remember this one. Hillary doing the Macarena. Yeah, that, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, that was like, I just sent that because that was the first thing I made. That was when I was working at BuzzFeed. Mm-hmm. And it was like the first thing like I found. An early lesson I learned in like pop culture and like around the election in 2016. This was during the week of the it was right after the RNC. Mm-hmm. When Donald Trump was the candidate. And do you remember, like, it's like a whole mess where like Ted Cruz wouldn't like say outright I support Donald Trump, and there was like a lot of drama.
Yeah.
And it just felt like the world was going completely insane.
Absolutely.
And then at that point, like, Hillary had pretty much been the only person besides Bernie Sanders that people were really like making content about or digging things up about. And I remember just sitting down and going on C-SPAN.com and just watching all of the 1992 and 1996 DNCs.
Uh-huh.
And they're each like 4 hours long. C-SPAN has really great footage that you could just watch through. And in the middle of it, the Macarena starts playing. And I think it was the 1996 one. Mm-hmm. And like Hillary's doing the Macarena and it's complete insanity. And I was like, how, after like over a year of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump being like the number one news items, has no one found this? And it's like perfect quality.
It's, you know, I'm curious because I remember, so Jesse and I overlapped listeners at BuzzFeed. And I guess I'm just curious because, you know, obviously you tweet a lot. Would you say you're a person with a short attention span or not? Like, where I constantly think, for the people that are really good on Twitter and just like, you know, today you sent me or yesterday you sent me the Cheers intro with Pennywise just thrown in there. Can you tell me what you were doing when that idea even popped into your head?
Yeah, I definitely have a super short attention span. Like, it's bad. And I was watching Cheers because I love Cheers on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's just during the theme, just thinking Pennywise the Clown should be in there. Mm-hmm. Because
why not?
It would just make sense because it's in New England. Uh-huh. And that's where the clown was. And in the movies and in the stories, the book.
Oh.
It's always described as them finding like old archival stuff and then finding the clown in the background or evidence of it.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing all these like old archival New England photos of people at a bar. Yeah.
Yeah.
It made sense. And then I wrote it down in my notes on my iPhone.
Yeah. The other thing too, and I feel like it depends on the tweeter themselves, but I will say it was well done. Like I was watching it and I thought, so he had to have done this in Photoshop, I'm guessing. Like it was, you know, Pennywise himself was very finely matched color-wise into each shot, I noticed.
Yeah.
So I mean, go ahead.
That part takes, yeah, that's where the short attention span like works against me. So
yeah.
Like having the idea and writing it down on my phone, and then I have a full-time job and we started a break on that the day I made that.
Mm-hmm.
So for a few days before, I'm like, when my vacation starts, I'm going to sit down on Photoshop for like 4 hours and do this thing.
Do you ever, are there ever times where like you do come up with an idea and it takes so long? And so at some point while you're creating a thing, do you ever go, actually, this is a bad idea and stop, or you just go all the way always?
I don't know. Usually the bad idea happens like right after I post it. And then I realize no one cares about this. That happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2 days ago, right after during the Democratic debates, I like made a Too Many Cooks video with like every candidate.
Love
and it took like forever because I had to get like a little piece of footage of each of them and then match the font of Too Many Cooks. And then like I posted it and everyone's like, this is stupid.
Now, the people that said this is stupid, were they? Because I wouldn't say you're like a particularly political tweeter. Like, and I say that knowing that you did the Hillary Macarena thing. But I think that there's a difference between like people talking about what's her name? Oh my God, what's the name of the woman who was just in that Democratic debate who's crazy and everyone would not shut up about her?
That depends how you define crazy.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I think she has some interesting points.
Well,
and you could put me on record as a supporter.
Right. Okay, great. So
I'm Googling it right now also.
Marianne Williamson.
Marianne Williamson.
Right. Yeah. Now what I thought was interesting about the like the internet response to her was there, you know, it wasn't anything about like when I was looking, it wasn't like people are like you're not a person I would say you're talking about people's policies. It's more like you're making sort of observations on you know, things on the surface, not necessarily like, I don't like this person's policy. The reason I'm bringing all of this up is because I'm curious if, as a person who does a lot of tweeting and stuff, do you ever get like hate tweets from people? Because I feel like depending on the content you get, it's gonna be very different. If you're like, I feel like people that are, you know, talking more about politics and the nitty gritty are gonna get a lot more hate than you. But I could be wrong. So am I wrong?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think a lot of the stuff, maybe most of the stuff I make, is in the world of politics, but it's not like too intensely political or doesn't bum you out, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of the things I do, like when, you know, Sean Spicer was the press secretary and, you know, it felt completely insane, you know, the way he behaved and everything just felt weird. We're getting used to everything. You know, like I did something where it was like green screening he wore a green tie one day, like the fourth day in or something.
Mm-hmm.
And just green screening his tie was like enough to like, you know, give people some kind of release of
Absolutely.
You know, it was.
Oh.
It's a way of making fun of someone without having to like scream. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And actually, one of my favorite things was while you were at BuzzFeed, I would call it a meme. It was, I think, you and a bunch of other people at BuzzFeed eating mayonnaise, and it was Tucker Carlson. You just took a bunch of clips of Tucker Carlson, and I forgot what was. What was like?
Oh yeah,
the...
it was Tucker. Yeah,
go ahead.
I remember
Set
what you're talking about.
Yeah,
it was BuzzFeed was launching a Twitter show, so they needed like they needed an account to like I think. So BuzzFeed was launching a Twitter show called AM to DM, and they needed to make an AM to DM account. They wanted to get as many followers as possible in a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an idea for a while that I wanted to do, which is Tucker Carlson looks at all his guests like they're eating mayonnaise straight out of a jar.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it was just like taking the clips of him when he's like staring at his guests, talking with like that open mouth, kind of befuddled look, and then overlapping the person on the other side of the split screen with just someone eating mayonnaise out of a jar.
Mm-hmm. I feel like.
And so we took a bunch of, See, it wasn't real mayonnaise, it was pudding, but yeah.
Oh, nice. It looked, I really thought you guys were eating mayonnaise. So I feel like that tweet and the Hillary tweet to me are good examples of like, if I were Tucker Carlson or Hillary, I could chuckle at that, is what I'm saying. I mean, like, if I saw that and I was in one of your memes, chances are I don't think I would be offended. I feel like there's like a level of playfulness to like, everything that you do that isn't like mean-spirited, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I try to ground things in reality or something objective. So like the observation that undeniably that face you're making looks like you're fucking watching people eat mayonnaise. Because when we put someone eating mayonnaise there, it's extremely clear that it works,
exactly.
You know?
Oh,
so like it's not just like putting devil horns on someone kind of thing, mm-hmm, where it's like, even if someone is, you think, legitimately like evil or terrible, it's, I don't think it's enough to just do that. I think you have to point out some objective problem with their logic or something they've done in the past that contradicts what they say, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Did you start making stuff on Vine? Like, did you start making stuff on something else before Twitter?
Yeah, I used to, like, just have fun on my own Instagram, you know, just for, like, my friends and that kind of thing. And then there's a job opening at BuzzFeed, and I forget what year it was, probably, like, 2015, I think, 2014. But there's this opening at BuzzFeed. They're starting this team that was supposed to just experiment on social media to see what does well. And they needed someone who does video. And I had worked in TV, and I made a lot of videos on my own Instagram just for fun. So I applied to that, and I ended up joining this team. And at that time, because it was like 2015, the main focus was Vine.
Right.
So my first job at BuzzFeed was kind of like just making Vines all day and seeing what works, seeing like what do people respond to, what do people share a lot.
Okay. Would you say from there, like, that's when people started to, I mean, strangers, not just your friends, started to take notice, like, of your work, of your Twitter account?
I think it was the first thing I had that, like, most of the things I did were just for BuzzFeed, not under any kind of byline or anything.
Oh,
so, like,
I gotcha.
It would just be like BuzzFeed's Vine, BuzzFeed's YouTube or whatever. But it was great. I got a lot of freedom to just make whatever, and I learned a lot creatively in that time. But I think it was that Hillary Clinton doing the Macarena thing, which is why I wanted to, like, that was one of the first things that I made. And then the people at BuzzFeed were like, yeah, this isn't really for us. I was like, really? And then they're like, yeah, I mean, I think it was like the news department at the time. We're just like, yeah, that's not really like news or whatever. So I was like, all right. And I ended up just posting on my own Twitter, knowing I was like, this is going to get attention.
So then you
and then that was like, yeah, that got me a lot of Twitter followers. That kind of like started me like getting people actually following me to find stuff like that.
Sure. I mean, I would imagine if I were a person who was a meme master, somebody with a lot of Twitter followers, that, you know, being able to just randomly post stuff is great. I think there would be, and it sounds like it was the right fit at the time with BuzzFeed, where they weren't necessarily, like they said, this isn't for us, but it sounds like you could really do whatever you want, because I think it would be a lot of pressure if you had to sit down and go like, all right, let me think of some tweets. Like, it seems like what you're doing is like very organic. It's not like you're like, all right, I need some tweets and I need to make them about Hillary Clinton. It sounds like it was,
yeah, although sometimes it is like that, because there's, you know, if there's a big cultural event that everyone's eyes are on, like,
sure.
MTV, like at the time, like the MTV Video Music Awards or something at BuzzFeed, it's like our audience pays attention to this and we should make things about it as it's happening. So like during times like that, we would have to like start building that muscle of like, can you just make something quickly?
Sure.
But for the most part, yeah, like the things that I made that have been super successful and I'm proud of came up kind of organically of just be daydreaming, spacing out, and then making something.
Yeah. No, I would say that's the gift of having a short attention span sometimes, is that there's probably, and I also have a short attention span, so there's just things constantly popping into your head all the time that you just don't even know where they come from. I mean, a lot of this stuff, like Pennywise and Cheers, a lot of it comes from having watched a lot of TV growing up. So I feel like this is a good time to ask you sort of what is your history with Frasier, if any? Because I, you know, obviously I want to talk about it a little bit. I know you mentioned that you're a Cheers fan, but yeah, what is, if any, did you ever at any point in your life catch the reruns, check it out on Netflix?
Okay, I'll give you a timeline.
All right, let's hear it.
When I was a kid, I would fall asleep to Cheers because my sister and I had a TV that played, I guess Cheers was on by the time we'd go to sleep. And that might have done something to my psyche, just that theme song, So that's the beginning of it all.
Gotcha.
And then I never really got into Frasier until like very recently. I had a roommate after college, my first, like when I moved to New York and had my first apartment, I was sharing an apartment with three other people. And one of our roommates would just watch Frasier in her room and laugh so loud, like through the walls. You just hear this laughter constantly. Like, and it was just like this booming laughter. And we'd like, then she'd leave her room and like go to the bathroom and go get a glass of water. And we'd be like, what are you watching in there? And she's like, I'm watching Frasier. And we're like, Frasier's that funny? And she's like, yeah.
That's so funny.
And that's when I first got interested. Yeah.
Wow. You're going to have to give me her name after this. And then I can tell her to.
Oh, I will definitely give you her name. She would love to talk about Frasier, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think what's really fascinating about Frasier now is, I mean, I did grow up watching a lot of sitcoms. Frasier was definitely up there, like when it was on. And I will fully admit, I definitely didn't understand why I thought it, like, I thought it was funny when it was on, because I thought it was funny that he was like not British, but like spoke like he was British when I was a kid. And then more recently think like, oh, wow, there's some really great writing on this show. But also I do think that because it's on Netflix now, it's definitely gotten a second life. And this brings me to weird Frasier, because I feel like Seinfeld definitely had a sort of second internet life with like Seinfeld 2000, modern Seinfeld. And I feel like Frasier's having its own moment right now. I'm going to throw some examples at you. And this might be the first time you hear of them. So one of my favorite Facebook groups is Frasier Shitposting. I think there's many shitposting sort of Facebook groups for other shows, but they're very sort of explicit in like, you know, this is where we're sort of weird. This is not Frasier Fan Club, which is another Frasier fan club on Facebook that I am also a part of. And it's really fun to just go back and forth between those two groups, because Frasier shitposting gets so weird and I love it. And then Frasier Fan Club has this more, you know, cheery sort of this is where I saw recently that two people who met in Frasier Fan Club are now married, and I am going to find them and try to get them to be on this podcast.
Do you think they'll name their baby Frasier if they have one?
I mean, I don't know. I think there's some interesting names to choose from. I've never met anyone else. Two on the nose. I've also never heard the name Frasier anywhere else. Have you?
Yeah, that's another. I was thinking about this yesterday, completely randomly. where are there other Frasiers? There's none.
I don't know. Niles, I've definitely heard, but not Frasier.
Because Frasier on Cheers was like, they kept having to have a new Frasier. Because when the show like started, it was like this bar where everyone's kind of like working class, and then you have Diane, the waitress, and she's sophisticated, and she likes the finer things, and she's kind of pretentious, and it works for the story to get her, you know, to take someone to the opera, and then, you know.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it was like she got too kind of dumb hanging out with everybody, so then they have to add, like, and here's Frasier. He's, like, really snooty.
Absolutely.
And then, like, Frasier goes through his whole, like, Diane breaks up with him, and then he ends up just, like, becoming a barfly, and then it's like, here's Lilith. She's super snooty. And it just became this chain of snootiness. The name Frasier is the ultimate, like, who can we make that's more snooty than Diane, who will really be fun to, like... It feels like Frasier is almost a name made up for that.
I mean, I wonder that, because I've never heard the name like anywhere else. Like, I only know the name Frasier from the show Frasier, and I can't think of any other names right now off the top of my head that I've never heard of before, except on Frasier. So I think
like Cher, maybe Cher.
Cher?
No, there's a lot of Chers.
I think I met a Cher. I think I've met maybe one Roz in my life. Roz exists somewhere. I would say to me, it's a more rare name, and I've definitely heard Daphne and Martin. Niles, I definitely...
What about Niles?
Niles, so not... No. Niles I associate with the nanny, because the butler on The Nanny is named Niles, who acts a lot like Frasier and kind of talks like Frasier and looks like Frasier.
Can I have I'm speaking of short attention span. Can I interject for a second?
Go for it.
Why'd they need a nanny if they had a Niles?
Can we
talk about that? That's the elephant in the room. This guy has a butler, but he needs someone to help take care of his kids.
That's right. That's what happens when you're rich.
That's extremely, that's insane.
I think, like, The Nanny is one of my favorite shows, because I like that they've got, like, anytime now I see a show that has snooty people that feel like they could be British, I immediately think of Frasier. So to me, the thought that you've got your Frasier world mixing with not just your everyday folk, but your Jewish folk, and I am Jewish.
I'm half Jewish.
Okay, so me too. But question is, what side
are you? Which, if you ask my mom, is full Jewish.
Oh, exactly. So my mom's full Jewish. So that means you and I are both full Jews, no matter what we do.
Yeah.
So that's what I love about Judaism. Back to The Nanny for a second. So I like the idea of sort of uppity people sort of having to mix with people that are nothing like them. It's just ripe for humor, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I think...
And that's why, like, Frasier has, like, the Martin character works so well.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Like, Frasier versus Cheers. Cheers, to me, was, you know, and I will fully admit to you that, like, no, I have not watched Cheers all the way through. I've watched the pilot. I've watched some of the Frasier-specific episodes, like, where there's an episode where you meet Frasier's mother, Hester, and it's absolutely fascinating to me that Hester on the show, I don't know, have you seen every episode of Cheers?
I binged it last year, but my brain is bad.
That's okay. So I'll just tell you.
Wasn't she crazy?
She's crazy. She tries to, she threatens Diane's life.
She has a gun, right?
She has a gun. And so when you see her, I mean, she's dead in Frasier. So you see her, like, Rita Wilson plays, there's a whole episode of Frasier where Frasier dates a woman who looks exactly like his mom when she was young, played by Rita Wilson. And then later on in the show, you see Rita Wilson as, like, a ghost as Frasier's mom. And she's, like, definitely not crazy like the portrayal of her on Cheers. So it's very interesting. Also, fun fact, Martin, a.k.a. John Mahoney, is also on Cheers in one episode as, like, a bar patron. Fully not...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
I just love when weird stuff like that happens. I think there's...
Screwed up with Diane. I'm going to say that. Diane was a much better character on Cheers, and when she came back to Frasier, it was, like, so mean to the character.
Yeah, you think so?
Where she was just, like, pathetic, and she was conniving, and she, you know, where she was, like, putting on that play?
Yeah, of course.
Also, both of those, I mean, there's two that I know of. Also, my fiance watches Frasier obsessively. I'm watching Cheers, so that's a little window into our relationship.
Interesting. But, okay, a Frasier Cheers home. I mean, that makes sense to me. She's more uppity and British, and you're more like everyday man likes a nice beer at the end of the day.
I think that's exactly right. But she will be watching Frasier, so if an episode piques my interest, I'll stop and watch it. Like, anytime there's someone from Cheers, obviously.
Of course.
It's a big night in our house.
Absolutely.
And I noticed, like, the two episodes, there's a lot of episodes, but two big ones where they, like, try to really make, like, a Cheers episode. Mm-hmm. The one where they're in the airport and there's, like, a Cliff's retirement party, which for no fucking reason is an airport.
Yeah.
But you can tell they find these creative ways to recreate Cheers without having to build the set commit too much.
Absolutely.
Or maybe even cross over intellectual property, because it's like, we're at this airport bar that is set up exactly like the Cheers bar, but with folding tables. and everyone's going to sit where they sit in Cheers. But, like, and then the other one was Diane's throwing that play. Mm-hmm. And it's like a set that looks like the Cheers set, but it's small and it's on a stage.
Right.
It's just so funny.
I actually, something you said in an email stuck out to me because this is part of the reason I love sitcoms. But you said, I love Cheers because the characters choose to be there, even if it's kind of a sad place, unlike The Office and Everybody Loves Raymond. I fully agree with that. And I don't know if this comes from me being an only child, but there's something very comforting about, like, Frasier's a good example. I mean, you know, Friends, I wouldn't say has stood the test of time in terms of, you know, being homophobic and many other things. But I will say there is a fantasy element to a show like Frasier or Cheers or Friends that I feel like for some people would be frightening. But for me, I think, wow, it would be so fun if, like, you just got to hang out with, like, the same people you love, like, every day in the same place. Like, I feel like there's something very Black Mirror-esque about that, if it could actually happen, where you just woke up and you were inside your favorite show and you couldn't leave. But I probably wouldn't mind.
I'm the same way. I wouldn't mind at all. And, like, I hate any kind of change. The worst, you know, like moving out here. And when I moved out here is when I started binging Cheers.
Uh-huh.
That's like when I got like obsessively, it was the only thing I watched. Like we're out in a new apartment on a cardboard box and like a folding chair, just watching Cheers.
Right.
I think there's something too. It's sad. It's a sad place. They're like at a bar during the daytime with no windows.
Yeah.
And their lives are kind of sad, but they all choose to go to this place and... Yeah, and I think that's part of why I think Frasier is in the other camp, where I don't find the show like depressing or anything, but it's just the fact that it takes place somewhere where the characters are kind of stuck a little bit.
Sure. Yeah.
Turns it off to me.
Cafe Nervosa and Frasier's apartment, I would say, is where it goes back and forth. But actually, bringing up something you mentioned earlier, which I would love to get into. So I would say Cheers and Frasier are both iconic shows with their own followings. But then you've got a show like Frasier, which I call Weird Frasier now. It does have this second life of being recontextualized, put in T-shirts. Like, I have two Frasier T-shirts. One is a Frasier. It says Frasier, but in the font of Sega. And then I have another shirt that I have seen other people wearing this shirt. It's the guy from Eraserhead, but it's Frasier's face, and it says Frasier Head. And it's very weird and nonsensical. So, but Cheers, I would say, I don't, there is no weird Cheers. So I'm curious, what do you think is sort of the qualifications or what's necessary to make a show to be taken to this next like weird internet level?
This is something that like I've actually thought about a lot, because being on that experimental team at BuzzFeed, where my job was just make things for social media and see what people respond to. And there's like TV shows that are pieces of pop culture in general that everyone knows and everyone has seen, but that people just don't like sharing on the internet. And there's not always a clear reason why. And it's a bizarre thing. It's like when I started, I tried to make Simpsons things when I started.
Okay.
And because I was like, Simpsons, I was just like trying to think of like, what's a show that everyone knows from pop culture that would be fun to make some things about. And there's like no Simpsons content then for some reason. And then now, like a few years later, all of a sudden there's a lot of it. It's a very niche thing to talk about, but like, I think part of what makes something have a second life on the internet or just in pop culture is like, one, do people want to associate themselves with it for whatever reason? Is it cool? Is it, what does it say about you to say, I like this show? And, you know, there's some things like Seinfeld, even though it had that Seinfeld 2000, the Seinfeld 2000 was more about like the, like, you know, I think Michael Richards basically made Seinfeld just kind of like, meh. Like people didn't really want to associate themselves with anything with Michael Richards in it. And I think like something, the way that people expressed that they like Seinfeld was like through Seinfeld 2000, which was like a lot of text that was in the voice of Seinfeld and jokes about modern day, but it was less, a little less like just sharing gifs of the show and that kind of thing.
Right.
And I think Frasier is a show that's from that time period that was super popular that isn't, on the scale of problematic, isn't the worst, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, so, and I think that, so that's one reason why I think people are, like, identifying with Frasier. I think also Frasier probably lived on in some kind of, you know, another thing, like, why is Frasier in this world and not Cheers? You know, you never know, but I think part of it is maybe Frasier was on streaming early. I think Frasier was on Netflix pretty early.
Yeah.
And I say this because of my roommate who would laugh so hard you'd hear it through the wall, and that was like 10 years ago. So,
wow. Wait, was Netflix around 10 years ago?
I don't know if they were. Shoot.
I don't even know. I feel like I've been watching it on Netflix forever, and then I'm like, wait, no, I haven't. Or like, oh, I've had a cell phone forever, and I'm like, no, I haven't. Like, we existed before these things, and I struggle to remember what it was like all the time.
I wish there was a way to Google this. But I think that either way, at that point, Frasier was easily available somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think it's not just, is this something people want to associate with? Is it available? Does everyone recognize it? Mm-hmm. Because that's another thing. Like, you know, SpongeBob is probably the biggest piece of pop culture that has been recycled into, like, the internet and, like, everything, you know?
Interesting.
I think it just spans a wide generation. If there's an innocence about it, you're not, whatever. But think about the amount of SpongeBob memes that have been made from both, like,
you're right,
simple little ones to, like, really deep, weird internet meme kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. I never even thought about that. Wow.
Yeah, like, SpongeBob is, like, and it's consisted for a long time. Like, you know, when the lights go out at the Super Bowl, there's, like, some people post SpongeBob memes referencing some specific moment from some episode. And even if it's, like, just a picture from a specific scene, people will get it and share it. People... probably associate it with their childhood. And...
Yeah, here's a theory. I never thought I would have these two shows be in the same sentence, but I think perhaps part of the reason SpongeBob and Frasier might be sort of memed a lot is because, unlike Cheers, I would say like SpongeBob and Frasier after the fact, I think, or like a show like Pete and Pete, I think after some time has gone by, some people have sat back and thought, wow, this was a really weird show. Like, sometimes that's what I think about. Like, Seinfeld for me as well. Like, Seinfeld, my most specific example I can think of, because I don't know what camp this puts me in, but I was a really big fan of, like the last, I mean, I love Seinfeld, but the last, like, three seasons I really liked. And there were certain times where I feel like the show recognized that it was in this other universe. I feel the same way about Frasier. I do. Where it's just, there's like a level of absurdity, I think, that has carried through time and perhaps, you know, contributes. Like SpongeBob, I never really watched, but sometimes when I think about it too hard, I'm like, I don't understand. It's a sponge that is alive. Like, I don't, and I never watched it. Because I didn't have cable, so that's why, like, sitcoms are what I know, because I didn't have cable growing up, so I'm not in on any of the Nickelodeon jokes.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat.
Really? You didn't have cable either?
Yeah. Oh. No, I didn't have... Do you remember that show Two Stupid Dogs? That was clearly a ripoff of Ren and Stimpy for kids who didn't have cable.
What channel was it on? Do you know?
It was, like, on, like... You know, like Channel 7 or whatever, you know?
Now, I don't...
It's like a 7 or two.
However, now I'm wondering, like, I don't know what channel Pokemon was on, but when I was a kid, I watched Digimon. And I believe Digimon is a ripoff, I think, of Pokemon. And now I'm starting to think, oh, was Digimon for kids that didn't have cable? I'm not sure. But I have a weird catalog of shows that, like, only lasted one season because they were on, like, NBC. Like, one that comes back in my mind a lot is this show called Working, starring Fred Savage, and that only lasted one season. There's a lot of shows.
I do not remember that, but yeah.
There's a lot of shows.
Do you remember a show called Greg the Bunny?
Yes, I do. Oh, yeah. Greg the Bunny. So there's Greg the Bunny. And then there were just shows that, like, one of the shows that you mentioned when you're talking about people being stuck in places. So I don't, with the exception of Arrested Development, I don't really have a tolerance for, like, unhappy family shows. So, like, Everybody Loves Raymond is one of the most depressing shows on earth. So
I want to shoot myself when I watch that show.
Yeah, Married with Children, I put in the same category.
So upset.
Did you ever watch...
Raymond Hates His Life.
Oh, my God. He's so miserable.
He's mean to his wife and his... Mom is so mean, and people are always so sad and angry.
And
at
nobody loves Robert, his older
nobody
brother.
Loves Robert.
Nobody loves him. Nobody would save him in a fire. It's like, it's so upsetting. And like, oh, and there's another show I was thinking of. Did you ever see the show Titus that was on Fox?
You remember that one? Yep.
Titus was also really
Titus, comedian.
Yeah, he's a comedian, and I just remember the show delved into and like, good on you, you know, talking about uncomfortable things growing up with like a unstable mother, but all of the he did these like kind of like Bernie Mac did on his show, like sort of a breaking the fourth wall where he would talk to camera between like transitions from scene to scene. His was what looked like it was in a storage closet, and he would like pull this the light on and off, and it was just a bulb swinging above him, and it was very depressing. And why do I mention all of these things? Because Frasier to me was this like safe space that everything on that show plays like a play, like theater. It doesn't necessarily read at all like real life to me, and I found that very oddly comforting personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that, and also that aspect of TV shows that oh wait, really quick, I have an end to that thought about Cheers versus Frasier.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
So, but like in summary with the Cheers versus Frasier, why is one popular than the other? I just think Frasier was available wider to the, you know, millennials and Gen Zs or whatever earlier. Mm-hmm. And it's been around for a while. So people get the references and get the show. Mm-hmm. I think Cheers is on Netflix now. I wouldn't be surprised if like 5 years from now you start seeing a lot of Cheers content.
Oh.
Like, I know that sounds crazy, but it's like, it's not, Cheers is old, but now that it's on Netflix and all the seasons are there, like, I wouldn't be shocked if, yeah, like 3 to 5 years, you just start seeing more inside jokes that you'd only get if you watch Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Office goes away from Netflix, who knows?
So actually, I'm curious, with Cheers in mind, are there other shows that you feel like are going to have a second life somehow, or will, or should, other than Cheers, for example?
I have no idea. It's so hard to predict. It's like a show like South Park. Like, everyone's watched South Park, right? But people do not share South Park things on the internet. I mean, like, some people do, but you don't see, like, you don't see it everywhere, spanning across, like, generations. And
I agree.
Just like a show, And there's no specific reason why. It just kind of isn't something that people think is cool, I guess.
Yeah.
And then maybe like, but maybe in like 10 years, maybe the show goes off the air. Maybe, you know, whatever happens, like that might all of a sudden be something that people share a lot. And it's just like impossible to predict.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I want to answer that what we were talking about before. I don't think a show is bad, because if it takes place in one setting where the characters are stuck, like, it's just not for me.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
But it sounds like you're the same way, where it's just like, it's just not the vibe I like from a sitcom.
Right.
And I think Frasier, out of every show that is like that, kind of is the least depressing, because of, you know, I love what you said about it's like theater and kind of feel separate.
Yeah.
And I think the nature of the show itself, they openly talk about and think about their place in life and, you know, and their psychology and their fears. And because they're so open about what's on the inside, it kind of makes it, I don't know, less, it's not, and like, that's not going to happen on Everyone Loves Raymond.
No.
They're just going to keep just like floating through life in a miserable way for decades and never really think about it. And then, you know, but, I think at least on Frasier, it's like they have these anxieties that you have and they talk about them, and that's kind of comforting.
Absolutely. You know, it makes me angry when I think about the fact that like I know everybody loves Raymond because, you know, my mom and my grandpa, of like, not surprisingly, like that show. So I have, like, I know entire episodes of that show, even though I don't like it. And it just makes me so mad. Did you know, actually, this is my boyfriend loves to torture me with this because he knows how angry it makes me. There is a food show on Netflix called Everybody Feed Phil. Does this ring a bell to you at all? So he's one of the creators of Everybody Loves Raymond. He has his own food show. And I know it's because it is self-financed. He has a shit ton of money, therefore was able to make his own traveling food show from money from a show that I detest. And I'm just angry about it, and I just wanted to share that with you.
I mean, being part of any of these huge sitcoms for TV writers is like they get so much money and actors.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
But for me, I'm a TV writer now, and I'm like, I need to write on the Everyone Loves Raymond reboot or something and then be rich.
Right? Like, you know, the I'm
if you like watch the Instagram of some of these people who are just like minor characters on like these long sitcoms, they are living large.
Yeah, like who? Who's like a person?
Like a Kevin from The Office kind of person. I'm not, I don't know about him specifically, but
sure.
Like, you're like, oh wow, like Kevin from The Office is on a jet ski.
I mean, when you're in syndication, baby, like, I mean, like I'm a big fan of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And one of the things that I do like about the show is that, and I don't know how much of it is true, but I imagine it to be that, you know, what is Larry David or what is somebody in his position with that much money doing with their time? They're putzing around playing golf and going to, I don't know, benefits and having a large house and not much else.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's
that's a great way of looking at Curb Your Enthusiasm of why it works. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's not doing much. I get it. I'm like, yeah. And I just always thought it was so funny. Whatever Seinfeld interview I was watching or behind the scenes thing, basically either Jerry or Larry said that when they found out they got picked up for more episodes, that Larry's immediate reaction was to be upset because he was like, I have to come up with more of this. And I imagine to be a TV writer on a show that's scripted, I would think would be very anxiety provoking. Like, you know, I'm a person who I love to watch the last episodes of shows I've never seen just to be in on what's going on. And I watched the last episode of Lost, which means absolutely nothing to me. But there's people out there that are so angry with the way that it ended. And I'm always like, how do they figure out how they're going to end it? You know, I'm constantly thinking.
You're talking
about
to someone who loved Lost and believed in it, believed in there where a miracle was going to happen until 10:59 or whatever the last minute of the last episode was. I was like, they are going to explain everything. I had full faith, and when they didn't, it just ruined so much TV for me after that, where I'm just like watching, like, they don't have a plan.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know if, unless you're a show that's gonna like I, you know, I saw The Good Place announced, I think they're ending after this next season, which is four seasons, and I think they mentioned, like, or Mike Schur mentioned that, like, they knew how this was gonna play out, so I feel like that makes sense to me. You can play out four seasons, but I'm like, how are you going to predict what's going to happen in like 9, 10, 11 seasons? Which I want to give a shout out to the Seinfeld series finale. I was a fan. What about you? Because I know that it is hotly detested. I think that's a word. Hotly criticized. Highly criticized. Right? I think there are a lot of people that didn't like it.
I think it is one of those things where it's like, are you really mad at the story of the finale? Are you mad at the passage of time and your mortality? You know, it's like nothing is going to make you happy because the thing is ending.
Right.
And they ended it in a, I think, smart, creative way. And I think that's what you have to do. Like, I was thinking recently about the Parks and Rec ending.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
And how they really just went for it and did something insane.
Yeah.
And how I actually appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And I think it solves some of the problems with endings of shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's so sad to be like, so the apartment's empty now, and now we're all going to do something else. Maybe we'll die. I don't know.
Do you know that I am so sad I can't find it, but I interned at College Humor a long time ago, and I wouldn't say it was necessarily funny, but I just made a montage of series finales of shows where like the last shot is somebody leaving an empty house. So things that fell into that, The Nanny, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, I think the show with Alan Thicke, I don't remember what it's called. But yes, I would say
Growing Pains.
I think Growing Pains was like the somebody putting a like a last picture into a box and leaving.
But you know something silly is gonna happen right at the very end.
No, nothing.
Like someone's gonna be like, no. Sometimes
really,
no.
Like what's
I mean,
an example?
You know
of one?
Because you like didn't in the Fresh Prince one, wasn't it like someone was still in the bathroom or something, and or like you know like some there's always like. In my mind, there's usually like a little gag at the very end that's either just audio or someone runs back and forgets something. I could be completely making this up.
Well, in a way, you are describing the series finale of The Golden Girls. Not sure if you're a fan, but I do love The Golden Girls.
Huge fan.
And one of my favorite slash tear-jerking scenes is the final. Everyone does not move out of the house, but... Dorothy gets married to Naked Gun guy.
O.J. Simpson.
What? No. Yeah, she marries O.J. Simpson. Oh, God, and he's on Twitter. And he has so... You know what? Speaking of short attention spans, here's my short attention span. I am not following O.J. Simpson on Twitter, but what I have been doing is checking how many followers he has. The last time I checked, he had about 500,000 followers, and now I'm gonna check. Is he verified? Not yet. I bet that's coming.
There's a bad side of, you know, Twitter just being like a troll and like just getting people angry. He's trolling, and it's like it's awful.
Okay, back to my point, which is yes, I do think in some series finales at the end when people are leaving a location, something does funny happen. And at the end of Golden Girls, I think they're waiting. Dorothy leaves and the girls are like, oh, is she going to come back again and say goodbye? And then she comes back to give like a second goodbye. And it's very cute. So
yeah.
I think we could both be right. I think they're like The Nanny, nothing funny happened at the end. And it's definitely overused. I think if you're going to do the final shot in an empty house, something really special has to happen. I don't know what it is. But that's why I liked how Seinfeld ended, because they're also just truly terrible people. So I found it very like satisfying to see them be in prison. Did you ever watch Broad City?
I love Broad, like any episode I watched, but I haven't watched it like through.
Well,
does that make sense?
I only mention it because I mean, I don't know. That's the other thing. I never know what the rules are about ruining TV shows, but I will just say that that was a great series finale. They did a really great series finale, and I was a fan of the web series and the last quote, like line from the show is a line that. Or in a conversation that Alana and Abby have in the first episode, which similarly, like Seinfeld, they do the same thing. I think
there's a problem now too, where the internet is always trying to predict how something will end or fantasize about how it will end.
Oh yeah,
and it kind of like makes it so the show creators can't do that because the internet already, even if it's the best ending.
Sure. Oh, okay. Meme question for you. So you we're talking about sort of, you know, finding a C-SPAN footage that was just a gold mine of at least one really good meme. Do you feel like there's anything in pop culture? It doesn't even have to be a show, but do you feel like there's something that isn't being memed enough or should be getting some more attention or you know, has a level of absurdity that people aren't paying attention to. I'll give you an example. I think, although I do find that it has gotten probably a good amount of love at this point, but I was a really big fan of MTV's Next. And
Yes,
like a huge fan. I do feel like it got some level of love. I personally don't feel like it blew up to the level it should have with the sort of the title cards with the three fun facts about each contestant, which, by the way, I believe writers wrote those, which makes me feel better because I find it hard to believe that anyone is actually that absurd of a person, like the girl that pooped in a cardboard box. Do you feel like there's anything that should be getting another level of love for its absurdity?
I mean, anything I would mention would just be something I like very specifically.
Yeah.
So it would be like, you know, again, a Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
Cheers is great. I don't know, actually. That's really tough. I used to think The Simpsons should be, you know, represented more on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, Hari Kondabolu documentary.
Right. Yes. Yep.
The Problem with the Poo. I've heard the name of it.
It's The Problem with
the Problem with the. Yeah. I think after that and The Simpsons responding in ways that were not so exactly great.
But
for some reason, even after that, I saw a lot of Simpsons stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of what brought it back into mainstream pop culture.
Yeah.
And I think The Simpsons itself created some kind of GIF generator or screen grab generator that you could just like type in anything and it will come up.
Oh, wow.
So if you're watching the Democratic debate and someone says something that you're like, oh, that's exactly like what Hans Molman said in that one episode, you could just type in that and it'll come up and then you could just post it right away.
Yeah. I mean, I think you are absolutely right in terms of like, you know, the fact that if Cheers hasn't been on for as long as Frasier, I think that could probably contribute. And it's also kind of crazy to think about, like, there are probably shows that I just don't have access to that if I could, I would be sharing clips. And it's very much dependent on where you can find this stuff.
That's another huge element of how much is something going to live on in pop culture. Can someone just grab something, you know, if it's just on DVD?
That's right.
It's like, yeah, you'd have to do a lot of work. But yeah, I think also like The Twilight Zone is my favorite TV show of all time. That's so iconic, has so much imagery.
I love Twilight Zone.
You don't see Twilight Zone everywhere. It's on Netflix.
Yeah,
but I would love to see The Twilight Zone have more of a life of people remaking things with it and being ironic and being fun and whatever.
You know, I'm that gives me hope because I don't know if you organize sort of.
Oh, I'm Martin.
You're what?
Martin.
What about Martin?
The show Martin should have a resurgence in meme world.
Oh.
Like a huge one.
Okay. Is it streaming anywhere?
I'd have to Google it.
All right. It's definitely.
It was streaming a few. Yeah.
It's a show that I never really got to. I don't know if I ever. No, I definitely did not watch it. And I don't think it was out of choice. I think, was it on Fox? Like, I'm trying to remember. I can't remember. But it's.
I'm pretty sure Martin was on Fox.
Okay. Yeah. It was definitely. It's definitely got a following. I think it's definitely.
I don't think it's streaming anywhere, but I feel like it's on one of them that's like a pay subscription, like Amazon or something.
Sure.
But revisiting that show, it's like you forget how huge this show was, and I feel like that's another one that's due at some point. You'll see like have another big.
You heard.
If we're talking about like, I'm trying to think of shows in the era of like, you know, like 90s sitcoms.
Yeah.
That haven't like really had like a huge, like people revisiting them. I feel like that's a big one.
That's good. So we'll keep that in mind in the future that you made that prediction here on this podcast.
Exclusively.
This brings me back to what I think could be a great episode of The Twilight Zone, but also heaven for me, which is being trapped in your favorite TV show. That sounds just wonderful to me, I think. What to me what would be great is if you just never realize that it's happening over and over and you just like have no memory of it. Then it sounds great. It sounds great to me to be is there anywhere that you feel like you could be? I mean, saying it that you're stuck somewhere just doesn't make it sound fun. But do you feel like there's somewhere if you were you had to be fictional or not, do you think there's anywhere you could be where you could you would not go totally bonkers?
No. I remember when I was like I was a kid, I went to like a Christian church, and when they taught me about the concepts of heaven and hell, yeah, I cried hysterically for days thinking I don't want to live forever. And they're like, no, 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 that's not the point, it's good. I was like, no, I don't want to live forever.
Oh my
and then
God.
They're like, so you want to just die? And I was just like, no. I remember the way they stopped me from crying was convincing me that God would put me in a coma in heaven.
Whoa.
which is very interesting. But to me, if I can be in a sitcom setting, mm-hmm, where I have no memory or not, I have no, you know, I don't know what's really the big picture, mm-hmm, that I'm just on a continuous loop forever, mm-hmm, that's fine. That's,
okay, yeah,
to me, the only suitable idea of an afterlife that sits well with me.
That's heaven. Just get rid of your memory. Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Get rid of them.
Don't need them. Get rid of them. I have
a bad episode idea pitch to give you.
Oh, go for it.
A global warming denier turns into a polar bear.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
That is very
high. It's a bad idea, but hey, that's just fun.
It's high concept. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jesse, for being on. Is there anything that you want to plug before we say goodbye?
Not really. You can find me on Twitter, but that's, who cares?
It's Mick Jesse. It's great. Love it. Great. Because, you know, Twitter for me, for everyone, obviously can be very anxiety provoking. You know, anything that you're worried or upset about, it's just echoed by thousands of other people. But I feel like your Twitter account, along with I just started following We Rate Dogs, is just,
yeah,
it's nice. It's real nice. It's just like a nice
hobby.
Escape. Oh my God. All I do is look at dogs on Instagram. That's what's happened. And Frasier. All right. Well, thank you so much. And until next time, everybody, good night, Seattle.
Tune in for a new episode of I'm Listening on November 12th, when my guest will be comedian Abby Crutchfield.